Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Curzon Film Podcast. You're joining us from a galaxy far, far away, but not too far back in time. Yes, we're talking about Gareth Edwards' Rogue One, a Star Wars story. The first spin-off, prequel, sequel,
standalone
thing that has been added to the Star Wars universe since our galactic overlords, Disney, took it over. Joining me this week is Ursi Kalensi.
Hello, hello.
And Ursi, I think, might be a Star Wars fan.
Oh, I don't know. I went to see it twice already and yeah, loved it. And
yeah, so it's like at the time of recording, it's been out for a day and you've seen it twice.
Yep.
So yeah, she likes Star Wars.
Safe to say, yeah.
Yeah. We've got a lot of ground to cover. This is definitely one of the biggest films of the year. And one of the big things about it is where it stands in the Star Wars community, continuity. Although, in the Star Wars community is a larger debate as well.
Yep, I would say so. So
we've got the original Star Wars, or Star Wars A New Hope, or mm-hmm. just A New Hope, and then Empire Strikes Back, and then Return of the Jedi, and then we've got the three films that we don't really talk about.
Nope. No.
And then we've got this film, which plants itself firmly in between the two.
Absolutely.
And so this gave us a interesting question of, we've got a film here that is set in between two films that pre-existed in the franchise. And so this week's question is, if you could take, or if you could create a film in a film series and drop it in between two films of that pre-existing series, like Rogue One has dropped itself in between Revenge of the Sith and A New Hope,
mm-hmm.
what series would it be? And what would your film be?
Right. First of all, thank you so much for such a specific question, because
yep.
it took me a while to get through it. But now I think you'll like my answer, Jake, because I chose Indiana Jones franchise.
Yes.
And there is a moment in the movie that shall not be mentioned where Indiana Jones talks to Mutt about his time in the band of Pancho Villa in 1916. So he was raiding the Mexico-US border with a known Mexican revolutionary. So you take that little story, you plant it in The Last Crusade and the movie that we'll not mention.
Excellent. Yeah, I would love to see that. I was really thinking of Indiana Jones as well.
Excellent.
For this. Excellent. Last Crusade is my favorite film. And so naturally, I have an instinct to want to see more Indiana Jones.
Yep.
I did perhaps get that wish in 2008. But yeah, I would like to see that. I think it was bandied about for a bit, potentially Chris Pratt as a Indiana Jones
I would watch that
character.
Movie.
Like he's definitely established himself as that particular, you look at him in Jurassic World.
Yeah. I think it was maybe Chris Pratt's audition for Indiana
yeah.
Jones.
I could see it happening, although I was actually thinking of this as my answer, so we could have had a very boring opening question. So I did change it, but my position for Indiana Jones was to not even put it in between two films, but actually put it in between two cuts from the opening sequence of Last Crusade, where it's River Phoenix,
mm-hmm.
and then he puts the chap puts the hat on River Phoenix, and then he looks up. It's Harrison Ford, and I'd like to see those events in between.
River the hat,
yeah,
nice,
like,
because
that's so much time to go from. So that's where where I'd cut it from. But yeah, I think that would be really cool. So is this classic indie? Is this a religious artifact or?
No, this is indie going, you know what? I'm going to give archaeology a little bit of a break.
Okay.
I'm going to join the revolution for Mexican independence. And I'm going to be raiding like U.S. military outpost in 1916.
So this is the Rogue One. This is the war film.
Exactly.
Like, we've had the adventure. Now it's into the war.
But now it's like, yeah, now it's gone a little bit political.
This is gritty.
Yeah.
So we don't want Spielberg for gritty, do we?
No.
Who is directing Indiana Jones and the raid of the American military?
Oh my God. Okay. I'm not sure how gritty we're going to make it. So, I mean, can you if we're going to go into the realm of complete surrealism, get Quentin Tarantino.
Oh.
Get a Quentin Tarantino Indiana Jones, make like blood splatter everywhere, just break completely from tradition.
Yeah, I could see that. I was thinking Gareth Evans from The Raid.
Oh my God, yes. That will be action packed.
Yeah.
You would not even have time to breathe during that movie.
Yeah, well, like when you look at Raiders, you don't really need the dialogue. You can just watch Raiders with the sound off and you really know what's going on.
Yeah.
And I think Gareth Evans, I think we know from The Raid, you don't really need to know what's going on.
No, absolutely not. You can just put your TV on mute and just go, yes, go, go.
When my dad watched The Raid, he didn't have subtitles on. But he just assumed that was how it was meant to be watched. And he said it was great.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, he really enjoyed it.
Okay.
So I look forward to the Gareth Evans, Quentin Tarantino mashup Indiana Jones film coming 2022, let's say.
Absolutely. Well, just in time for Chris Pratt to finish off his contract for it, and we're already good.
Excellent. I've gone a bit different for this one. So I was kind of looking at films that... not obvious franchise films, like tentpole films.
Mm-hmm.
So I was looking at Everybody Wants Some and Dazed and Confused. I thought Dazed and Confused is the end of the school year and Everybody Wants Some is the start of the school year.
Yeah.
And so Richard Linklater's effectively got these two bookend films. But I want to see the summer holiday in the middle.
Okay, so you would want a Richard Linklater wet American hot summer.
Yeah, like Richard Linklater Goonies kind of thing. Like just American summer adventure, Stand By Me, but a bit older. That kind of feel.
Okay. Would he be directing it as well?
Yeah. And I think that he's got Richard Linklater's... So the way that he plays with time is so interesting in his films, that Boyhood can span such a long amount of time, but feel so so light and refreshing as you're watching it. And Everybody Wants Some, which spans such a short amount of time, or Before
it's
Midnight.
About a week, isn't it?
Well, only a weekend.
Yeah.
And then Before Midnight and Before Sunrise and Sunset, such a very, very short amount of time. And yet the depth in there and the content that's covered feels so big and long.
Yeah.
So I think a summer holiday, this like fixed point, which in America I think is about 3 months.
Yeah. So you can So you can have your protagonist kind of going to Galveston, Texas, and just spending an entire 3 months just on the beach talking, having a couple of beers, and just really and looking forward to college as well.
Yeah, and that whole thing of like that you have in that summer holiday before college of all these friends, eventually they disperse at different times depending on where their colleges start, and they disperse around the country. I feel like that could happen. That could be a thing.
Yeah. You'd separate your group of friends, the people that are going to the East Coast and the people that are going to the West Coast, the people that are staying in Texas. You know that's going to be happening in Texas. That would be good.
Yeah. So talking about a gang of friends that may or may not be dispersing.
Yeah.
Let's get back to Rogue One.
Yes. Let's.
So Richard Linklater's Rogue One. Yeah? No?
Richard, a lot of talking would happen, I would say. Not a lot of things would happen.
I'd still like to see that. I think Richard Linklater's a Star Wars story.
You can just about imagine the Imperial Destroyer having on speakers like My Sharona just playing up. It's like, party time!
Yeah. Well, they got away with that kind of thing in Star Trek Beyond.
Yes, so why not in Star Wars? Yeah.
Right, so this is, we're looking at Rogue One, and this is the story of how the Death Star plans that we... have stumbled upon at the start of the very first Star Wars, how they came into the hands of the rebels.
Yeah.
What did we make of this film, Ersi?
Seeing as I've seen it twice, I've had a lot of time to actually kind of really think about it. I think it's a very solid, very passionate, very heartfelt movie, in addition to a Star Wars franchise that some people might think is kind of is on reaching overload now, considering that the actual franchise is 7 episodes in. The 8th one's coming next year. So we will be getting a Star Wars film pretty much every year now. And considering the Han Solo standalone is going to come soon as well, it's a franchise that's easily can reach a little bit of a maximum, and then when people start getting a little bit of a fatigue. But Rogue One proves that you can have a standalone film that really is fantastic. It's got a great cast, a wonderful story, and it can add something new. It can add a breath of fresh air into this franchise.
I'm reminded there of last year's Sherlock BBC Christmas special, in which they said, no, it's a standalone thing. This episode is set in Victorian London, and was just like, it's just going to be that. It's just going to be set in Victorian London. But they couldn't resist. No. And they had to tie it into what's happening in the main series. Yeah. And that's what I've really, really enjoyed about Rogue One, is that it's contained. It's maintained its own story from beginning to end. It doesn't feel this constant need to loop you in to make you part of this cinematic universe. Mm-hmm. It really benefits from that constraint.
And the little hints that they give you from the rest of the storyline, they're not a massive part of the actual story. And there were a couple of like little drops from A New Hope, for example, that we won't give away, but I mean, you do see a couple of cameos, but they feel like they belong there. Mm. If they were not there, then you wouldn't have this solid Rogue One.
Yeah, and it's not that they're there to just constantly just give you a wink and a nudge and say, hey, it's part of the world. And so it makes sense that these characters would be there.
Yeah.
And with the story that's being told in Rogue One, certain characters being on the sidelines, it doesn't feel shoehorned, I don't think. So the plot begins with Jyn Erso, who is Felicity Jones's character, being abandoned.
Left behind, really, for her own safety by her parents. Just a great, great opening shot. I don't know how, because obviously you kind of, this isn't really giving anything away, but while you're standing there, you have the lovely title, "In a Long, Long Time Ago in a Galaxy Far, Far Away." And then you're like, oh my God, are the titles going to come up? I don't know. This is a standalone. Mm. And then you're Gareth Evans, in a lovely twist, just brings you completely into the action immediately. He's like, no, we're not gonna waste time with the titles. Just here we go. This is your story. And then you have a lovely setting in, I don't remember the name of the planet.
There are a lot of planets there are a lot in of Rogue planets. One to remember. I think that's fair to forget one. So we find Jyn Erso as a child. They're farming here.
Yeah.
They've left civilization, really. And she's left abandoned there because Ben Mendelsohn's Krennic, who works for the Empire, comes to get Galen because he is a weapons designer.
An architect engineer, I would guess, yeah.
Yeah, and so he leaves with Ben Mendelsohn. The mother, sadly, does not make that journey, and we are left with Jyn Erso stranded on the planet, and who is left there and then eventually rescued by Forrest Whitaker.
Yep. Forrest Whitaker, Saw Gerrera. Yeah.
And that's really where it starts, because you get that, and then it is Rogue One up on screen.
I got chills the minute I saw that title. I don't know about you when you were watching it, but I was like, oh, yes, it started. Oh, my God.
And it was in the nice yellow as well.
Yeah.
Because all the marketing and posters have had the title in this kind of silvery blue. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I want the yellow. I still want the yellow.
Yeah, of course. You still.
And it like the graphic design, the titling of it, it just looks so perfect.
It looks kind of new as well. Yeah. It's like, we're not going to go with the classic Star Wars episode, whichever. we're going to go a little bit, we're going to change a little bit, but still keep the yellow. So yeah. fans like us can go, it's still there, but it's kind of new. Ha-ha. Yeah.
And it didn't, crucially, it didn't say a Star Wars story.
Yes.
Well, I thought it just says Rogue One.
Yeah.
And it's establishing further that idea that this is its own vehicle. This mm-hmm. is its own thing. And from there, we go on this very wibbly wobbly journey to eventually mm-hmm. get the plans for the Death Star.
Yep.
And to be honest, after one viewing, I couldn't tell you the exact journey that we go on.
Okay. No, it's fine because, I mean, Edwards takes a lot of time to introduce his characters because we have to follow this band of rebels to get the Death Stars, and he needs to introduce all of them. Otherwise, you know, they have very different storylines. So you are introduced initially to Bodhi, played by Riz Ahmed, who is an Imperial pilot who defected with a message from Galen Erso to the rebellion. Well, specifically to Saw Gerrera, who is part of the rebellion. So you get to see him reaching Gerrera. Then you have Felicity Jones, Jones's Jyn Erso.
Now grown up,
15 years later, being taken by the rebels and in a way recruited against her will, really, because she's very much apolitical. She's isolationist, doesn't want to have anything to do with it. And they recruit her to go and talk to Saw, because Saw had been raising her for 15 years, but then she hadn't seen him again. They had a falling out. So there's a lot of ground
to
cover.
Yeah, I mean, the first, I don't know, half an hour, 40 minutes is very exposition heavy.
Yeah.
I mean, there is a lot of planet hopping. That is great in some sense, because you get the things that we do like about Star Wars, these busy, bustling streets where you get to see wonderful alien creations. And that's what the planet hopping is really great for.
Yeah.
But for me, it was slightly hard to keep up with what's happening where.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like, it felt like a scene took place on a planet and it was for 30 seconds and then we were gone and then we were arriving on another planet.
Yeah. I have to say the first 30 minutes of that movie are maybe, in my opinion, were a little bit weak, because I know that it's incredibly difficult. I mean, Rogue One is a 2-hour runtime and you have a lot of ground to cover before you actually get to the meat of the film. But there was one introduction that I really enjoyed, and that did take a little bit of time. That did take about a minute or two, but that was the introduction of Cassian Andor, played by Diego Luna. And it was his introduction as a rebel spy.
Yep.
And he first gets wind of the defector, of the pilot defecting with the message from Galen and the fact that the Empire is building the Death Star. And in order for them to escape, because they're spotted by stormtroopers, he needs to kill his informant.
Mm.
And it's one of those things that when I saw that, I was like, oh, okay, these are not heroes in the Star Wars space opera sense. They are rebels. Everything that they do is violent, or you know, they're in the middle of a revolution against an evil empire. So they have to make sacrifices, and they have to make choices that do not paint them entirely as good guys.
Yeah, and this is something that I think Rogue One does better than any Star Wars film before it, is the conflict amongst the parties.
Mm.
So if you like, it has very much been rebels are good, Empire is bad.
Yeah.
It's very black and white.
Yeah.
Here, there is clear conflict in between each side. Really before, like, there's almost more conflict between them. There's so much, you've got characters like Diego Luna's character, who is introduced by killing a member of his own team.
Yep.
And then who is tasked with a secret mission among his own team, who is given some set of orders whilst the rest of the team are given a different set of orders.
Mm-hmm.
And this also goes on in the Empire as well, where Ben Mendelsohn has certain aspirations and other characters want to take his achievements or what he sees as achievements from him.
Yeah.
And so that muddy water of war and the goals that people have amongst it, I think, is really clear in here. And it feels very much more like a war film.
Yeah, absolutely. I love the. If you look at movies like The Guns of Navarone, or even the Dirty Dozen, if you look at this, you always have a band of misfits, really, going on undercover missions, and they are tasked to bringing something in or to stopping something. They have a clear goal, and this you see that with Rogue One. It is a band of people that come from very different backgrounds, have different specialties as well, and come together and make a really great kind of ensemble cast. A very, very varied actors as well. Mm. I mean, you've got Felicity Jones, which we have seen in things like The Theory of Everything and soon A Monster Calls.
Yeah.
And then you have Diego Luna, who is a Mexican actor and a darling of indie cinema of his country. And then you have Mads Mikkelsen.
Yeah.
You have
Forest Whitaker.
Forest Whitaker. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Donnie Yen.
Yeah, it's like international heavyweights.
Yeah.
From lots of different levels of cinema as well. Yeah, it's a real eclectic mix of characters there. And Ben Mendelsohn, this is such a Ben Mendelsohn role.
So much.
My favorite Ben Mendelsohn performance is in The Place Beyond the Pines,
where
he's so oily and grimy, and he just doesn't look like he's had a wash in about 10 years. he's so waspish as well. Mm-hmm. And I think we both agree that he's one of the real highlights of this film.
Oh, absolutely. Whenever he comes on screen, you don't know whether to cheer or cower away a little bit, because he does. I read an interview that he did, I think it was with The Guardian, where he was speaking about his character, who is director Krennic. And he said that the twist, I don't know if you noticed, but the twist that he put into to his character was that this was a man that did not come from the same background as all other Imperial officers. Because, you know, in other Star Wars films, they have a very crisp, very English accent, all of them. It's almost faultless. But he kept a little bit of his Australian accent inside. So automatically you're like, okay, you're not like all the other guys. And then he imbued his character with a man who is so ambitious because he came from nothing. A man who is so ambitious will go through anything to kind of achieve a high role within the Empire.
Mm.
And it shows so much. I mean, he chews the scenery in everything he's in all the scenes that he's in. You're like, please, can I have more Mendelsohn in this?
Mendelsohn is terrific in this. And he really stands his ground against.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Some characters that have a touch more legacy than director Krennic, but we'll probably touch on that a bit more in our spoiler section. But imagine if you are listening to the show, there's a good chance you've seen Rogue One already, because I think everyone's trying to get to it on that first day. And so director Krennic is our baddie. He's the guy that's trying to get the Death Star finished, get it built so it can start wielding damage.
Mm.
And that damage, it is presented relatively early on. We see the power of the Death Star, and it is unleashed on Jeddah, in this temple city, in a phenomenally crafted explosion.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's the first thing that you noticed as well. Is that, you know, in when you first see a planet explosion, which is Alderaan in A New Hope, I mean, obviously they had technological limitations, but it's very simple. You don't have that extent of destruction, and then because they only aim for Jedha City. Mm. They don't aim for the entire planet. You see how much damage this thing can do, even with a limited target.
Yeah.
And it's beautifully done in a tragic way, obviously, because this is an explosion.
Yeah, and I think when you look back on the original Star Wars films, there's a lot of destruction, but that destruction isn't very intimate, mm-hmm. isn't it? This is, like, there are entire planets full of people being destroyed, and yet, arguably, the destruction in Rogue One, which doesn't see the Death Star by any means at its full power, feels bigger.
Yeah.
The explosion at Jedha and another one later on in the film, you really feel the destruction at a ground level, at a personal level.
Yeah.
And I think it's just rendered beautifully. The whole film is stunning.
Absolutely. It's one of the cinematography of this. If you were to compare this to maybe Force Awakens before it last year, this feels like it has a lot more texture to it because it dwells on so many scenes. So the opening shot in Iceland, it's beautiful. The colors are fantastic because you have that black volcanic beach and it's then superimposed on very green, very life, very green grass.
Mm.
And it's fantastic. And then obviously in the third act, I think, the cinema just goes everywhere.
Well, you've seen the posters and trailer, like the beach, which is such a simple idea to put Star Wars on a beach.
Yeah, I know.
And it's such a it's like a Hawaiian beach. It's so tranquil.
Where was it? The Maldives they shot there. Yeah.
And it's like, in our heads, that kind of beach is so lovely. And so to just throw a war in the middle of that,
war next to baby blue sea.
Yeah. And that's a thing that runs throughout this film, is so much in Star Wars we're used to seeing things in the dark, and this film is very light, and it felt weird, it felt wrong to be able to see so much.
Yeah.
And the whole film, it looks really lovely, but something that's missing from it, and I don't know if I'm glad that it's missing, but there's no wipes. There's no, and that is such a Star Wars thing.
Yes, indeed. Now that you, I think that's probably also Gareth Edwards trying to, because wipes, you can keep them in the Star Wars, in your actual franchise. Mm. But if you're going to do a standalone movie, then you can risk eliminating some tropes of the of the original. So you can forsake the wipes. But then you also have the opening shot that is in a farm with a child being abandoned by its parents. So, you know, you kind of replace one trope with another and you try and mix it up a little bit and make it your own, really.
And there's a really lovely balance between those kind of pristine tripod shots that we know of Star Wars, where you've got miniatures and everything is perfectly coordinated.
Yeah.
And then you've got mobile tracking shots that have got a relatively shallow focus,
mm-hmm.
that felt like something we hadn't quite seen before. It felt a very now style of filmmaking, in that because of the way that we have access to mobile cameras now, we can really get involved in things. And so, for instance, the final battle on the beaches, it's cliche to say that you feel part of the action, but you do.
You do. Yeah. You do. Yeah, because of because Edwards has done the handheld camera during an action sequence for Godzilla, his previous feature film, and you do feel a massive part of it. And at one point he even, I don't know if you noticed, but he goes, point of view of the camera is like it's on top of an X-Wing fighter. And you go with it, and it's fantastic because I hadn't seen that before, not in that scale.
Yeah.
And he does it really, really well, and I'm hoping that maybe going forward, Rogue One will be able to influence the next Star Wars episodes as well.
There's just this ongoing contrast in the visuals of kind of very grand staging contrasted with that street level mobility that really blends together nicely. And talking of visuals, Darth Vader's house.
Who would not want to live in a place that has a lava waterfall? I'm sorry. Like, this is prime real estate right there.
Yeah. In terms of, like, that's not something I ever felt like I wanted to see. Yeah. I never thought I'd get MTV Cribs does Vader. but Vader's house is so Vader's house.
Yeah.
Like, it looks like, to me, like, it looked like it was placed on a dam of lava and he was powering the electricity of his house using molten rock and fire.
Yeah.
It just makes sense, doesn't it?
I was whenever I saw it the second time, I was thinking, how great would it be to have Sauron be his neighbor? Like, you can just about picture them being such friends. It's like, you like lava too in your house? Yay!
So that's a little bit of Vader, and it is a little bit of Vader that you get in this film. But we will touch on more in the spoiler section. Was there anything that you want to bring up for any listeners before they've gone to watch this film, just to let them know why you should watch Star Wars Rogue One?
Why? Oh, my God. For a Star Wars fan, I think there is just the fact that it is the Rebels getting the Death Star plans and essentially kickstarting a new hope. You should just go see it. It's a story that kind of always begged to be told, especially since it's always hinted at.
Mm.
But if you do not like Star Wars, say, I don't know why, but say you do not, and you want to see a winter blockbuster before you get into all the Oscar-nominated ones, I would say that the greatest reason to go see it is if you like any kind of movie that is either a war film or has a band of misfits just joining in together for a greater good. Go and see that, because you will love Alan Tudyk's K2SO. You will love Felicity Jones, kind of underdog, finally joining in the fight. And if anything, you should go see it for Donnie Yen as well, because his character, Chirrut, he's the equivalent of a Zatoichi. He's a blind monk that is essentially powered by the Force, but not really a Jedi. And his action sequences are fantastic. So even if you like only martial arts in life and martial arts movies, you can go see Rogue One. It's got something for you.
Yeah, definitely. Right, so there it is. Star Wars Rogue One, or just Rogue One, a Star Wars story.
Yeah.
Do go and check that out. Stick around for the spoiler section for any third act revelations, which there are many. And we will be going through those in just a bit. But that is your spoiler warning from now. And let's get stuck right in.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many things. There's so many things.
The third act packs a punch of epic proportions. So what do you want to start
with? Okay. So, like, the things that I've written down that I really, really liked, or I think are the biggest talking points. I think maybe the biggest talking point is CGI Cushing.
Yes. Let's go right into that.
When I saw the back of the head, I was like, okay, are they just going to not show him? Mm-hmm. So we can see the back of the head.
Yep, and his reflection, like, on the glass.
And I thought, and the reflection's kind of blurred. And you think, okay, I get what they're doing. Mm-hmm. It's just a little character beat that we see him, but he won't play a bigger part because we know Ben Mendelsohn is the real baddie guy. And then when he turns around, it felt weird.
Very weird.
Eventually, I was fine with it.
Mm-hmm.
But the first few scenes, first few minutes, to me, it felt weird.
Yeah, my first viewing of it, through its entirety of the film, I was kind of not okay with it.
Mm.
Because I kept thinking to myself, this is CGI Peter Cushing, this is CGI Peter Cushing. It just kept running into my head every time I saw him. It's like, that's not real, it's not real.
Mm.
So it was very difficult for me to let go of him as computer animated. The second time around, however, I actually let go, because I was expecting it. I let go and I was like, this is Grand Moff Tarkin.
Yeah.
You haven't seen him since A New Hope. And yeah. just enjoy. Revel in the fact that he is back. And all of a sudden, I let go. I let go of my kind of fixations on his
the
kind
mouth.
Of strange rendering of his mouth.
Dead eyes.
Yeah, exactly. And I focused on his voice. I don't know how they did that. I don't know how they did his voice. I don't know if it was previous recordings or somebody who can do an uncanny Peter Cushing. But it finally felt like he was actually a part of this film. And at one point, essentially, when near the end, when he's going to give the order to blow up Scarif, you actually do feel chills because you know there's people down there. You know that even his subordinate, Ben Mendelsohn's director, is down there, Krennic. But you just gave that order in the chillest, coldest way possible, which reminded me of his order to destroy Alderaan. I was like, okay, here we go. I remember who you are and why I hated you in the first place.
Yeah. Yeah, I am looking forward to seeing it for a second time because a lot of the time with this and with Force Awakens, the first time around, I'm just thinking, oh, it's that, and it's that, and it's that thing, and we're here, and I know them, and I know him, and he's new, but he's old. And I'm just constantly thinking about what's like who and where we are rather than the story that's being told.
Yeah.
And so I think the second time around, as I said earlier in the show, that I had a bit of trouble with the first 40 minutes. But I'm hoping second time around it'll become a bit clearer as to why people are in the places they are and what they're doing.
Once the exposition kind of once you're familiar with it, it is so kind of fluid.
Yeah.
And it's great. And one thing that I'm gonna mention that I was really happy with. Okay, fine. You have CGI Peter Cushing. You have Grand Moff Tarkin there. That's great. Thank God they did not bring in the Emperor. Because I was like, you do not want to drown in cameos right now.
Yeah, yeah.
You really don't. You need to have a very, like we said, contain your film as much as possible, which they did, thankfully.
Yeah, they got the little nostalgia beats in just the right amount of time. 10 seconds of R2 and C-3PO.
Yep.
Just right.
Ooh, I had a problem with that, by the way.
Yeah.
Well, they're meant to be on the ship where Leia is, aren't they?
Well, they could still potentially, because they're on the... That's on the rebel base.
Yeah, in Yavin. So yeah. I'm hoping that, you know, because I was
that makes sense, cause...
wait, where are you? You're meant to be on that fight, C-3PO.
Yeah. Well, and mentioning Leia, Leia gets the last line of the film.
She does. And it's such a callback to A New Hope as well. She's great because she only gets 10 seconds because Carrie Fisher rendered in CG. I was like, they spent all their efforts on Peter Cushing's rendering. And I thought that Carrie Fisher was good. But if she had been on screen for a prolonged amount of time, I would you look a bit too pristine, Leia.
Yeah, for me, the Leia worked fine.
Yeah.
Because she didn't have that much screen time for me to look at her and go, your eyes look weird. Your limb, voice and face don't quite match up.
Your skin's too shiny.
Yeah, but I think they played that card just right.
Just right.
Particularly with the... And the line is cheesy, and it does tie in things very neatly on a nice bow. But I like that. It's fine.
Come on. I think when you have a story like this, tying everything in a neat little bow is great. But I mean, how about the scene that preceded Leia?
Oh, what? Combat Vader?
Oh my God. The fangirl inside of me, I think, fainted for like 10 seconds during that thing. I was just, it wasn't even up to Vader. It was, okay, so... Shall we start spoiling the end in Scarif Beach?
It's all fair game.
It's all fair game. So, as you probably know, our motley crew of rebels is doomed because, Peter Cushing gives the order to destroy it. But they get a chance to send the Death Star plans, obviously, up to the rebels, which is great. And they put the information in a little disc. But, however... Darth Vader and his group are boarding the rebel ship. And it's such a fantastic... I mean, you mentioned the raid earlier in this podcast. This was close quarters, even to the extent of Snowpiercer, actually, where the action starts in point A and you need to get to point B. But in that entire kind of corridor, you have problems.
Mm.
And Darth Vader comes in and... What did you think of the entrance?
Oh, it's lovely. And because you can just hear, before you see it, you just hear the
Yeah.
And then you hear the lightsaber, you just hear the sound of it being unsheathed.
Yeah.
And just pitch black, and then this red line. Oh.
And then Michael Giacchino's chorus kind of soundtrack just over it. And then the panic. These extras, by the way, don't know who they were, but they were actually panicked. I don't know how, but I was scared for them half the time.
Oh, I'd be scared. It's terrifying. Like, Vader at this point, it's the first time we've kind of seen him fully fit. Like, he can move.
Oh, God,
He looks dangerous. Like,
he's actually killing them. This is not, you know, your A New Hope kind of kills. This is brutal. Mm. This is people screaming for their lives, trying to get those plans as far back from him as possible. But he keeps catching up to them.
Yeah.
Like an unstoppable wave of just rage.
Yep.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. And that's the case for the film. It's very intimate violence at points.
Yeah.
They really ground the emotion and they ground the violence and explosions, and to the point that each death of our pivotal characters is really felt.
Yes.
I think bar Saw Gerrero, because he doesn't get as much screen time as all of our other band. In the final act, when people meet their demise, I felt each one of them.
Yeah. I thought that Donnie Yen's character, Chirrut and Bass, both of their deaths they were very emotional, because they both all of a sudden discover that the Force can help them reach a kind of spiritual immortality. So they die in peace. Even after Jedha City, their home city, had been destroyed. And I thought that Jyn Erso and Cassian Andor, Felicity Jones and Diego Luna's characters, just on the beach, there was something extremely romantic.
Yeah.
Like, in the proper sense of the word, about those deaths, because it's tragic and yet very tender at the same time, and very... they're martyrs, effectively.
And it's like Riz Ahmed as well.
Yes.
Everyone has the nice... That, again, it's a cliche that everyone does their one... Like, everyone has a big important thing that they need to do in the final act for everyone else to do their important thing to win the day. And so it's like Riz Ahmed gets... He has a plan that he needs to execute, and then he does that plan, and then he gets blown up.
Yeah.
And then someone else sees that explosion, and then they know that they need to do a thing, and they have to get through all of these blasters, but they just walk through it seamlessly. And in that sense, it's got a Magnificent Seven feel
to it. It does, yeah, absolutely. Very good point, yeah.
And everyone does have their particular set of skills.
Yeah.
But... I liked that. I thought they might pull a cop out and Felicity Jones might survive.
Yeah.
Or Diego Luna, because their relationship felt like they had a really nice chemistry between them.
They did, yeah.
And I was really pleasantly surprised. It's awful. I was really pleasantly surprised that everyone died.
I know. So such good news, ladies and gentlemen. So good. No, but I agree with you, because the Disney Corporation, I love you, by the way, Disney, but the Disney Corporation...
Praise Disney.
Praise Disney! Can be seen as, you know, trying to squeeze in as many films as they can out of any franchise that they're getting their hands on. But here, they show, I mean, I'm not saying that all Disney executives agreed, but they show a tremendous amount of restraint to say, this is your film, this is Rogue One. We have made it for you, Star Wars fans, and for whoever else wants to see a great little sci-fi film this winter. And that's it. That's all you're getting.
Yeah. And also the best drop of a film name in the film this year.
Oh, yes. Riz Ahmed as well. I just want to say that Bodhi, his character... For me, was the best thing in that movie. Him and Ben Mendelsohn, every single time they were on screen, my inner fan was cheering, pom-poms and everything, because they were so good.
Yeah, Riz Ahmed is having a massive moment right now. He is blowing up in two senses of the word.
Yeah.
And I think we might have to wrap up there. We could go on for another 45 minutes quite easily.
Yeah.
There's so much to talk about in Rogue One. And I'm sure you and whoever you go and see it with will have a humongous amount to talk about as well. So do go and do that. But also check out Curzon Home Cinema.
Yes.
Unfortunately, Star Wars isn't on there just yet. But there is a neat collection for the European Film Awards, which I was actually at last week in Wrocław, Poland. And there is a collection of films that are all nominated for awards, including Gianfranco Rossi's Fire at Sea, which is the film that won Best Documentary at the awards. And we actually, if you go back in time on this very podcast, you can find our special episode on Fire at Sea, in which Sam, one of our regular hosts, interviewed the director of that film. So go check out Fire at Sea and the whole European Film Awards collection on Curzon Home Cinema. And also thank you to CSR, as usual, for letting us use their studio.
Thank you.
Right, so thanks a lot for joining us, and we will see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Spin your passion into a business with Shopify and break sales records with the world's best converting checkout. Let's hear that one more time. The world's best converting checkout. Shopify's legendary checkout makes it easier for customers to shop on your website, across social media, and everywhere in between. Now that's music to your ears. Any way you spin it, you can be a smash hit with Shopify. Start your $1 a month trial today at shopify.com/records.